What is comedy?
Haha, funny.
Laughter is nature's copium.
I want to see someone hurt themselves in spectacular ways now.
Every edgy teen is the same edgy teen. Philosophers.
Philosophers.
So, David, as you've not listened to me for the last 5 minutes, I've written the outline for today's topic.
Let's see. How many episodes has it been since we wrote an outline?
It's been a minute, actually. But I kind of like going unoutlined, I guess, just kind of winging it.
Yes.
But I also do appreciate a little bit of an outline.
Every now and then, you need some structure. So this week, we're here to provide some structure in your life.
Yes, indeed.
Not really, but...
Mm-hmm. Because your father didn't do a good enough job. No.
And that's why you're listening to our show.
That's why you're listening to our show. Your dad's here, and we're going to talk to you about comedy.
Comedy.
Comedy. What is comedy?
Ha ha, funny.
Ha ha, funny. Yes, that's I think what we mean today. But I do distinctly remember in school... When I was talking about the Greek comedies and tragedies, you know, the face that's the symbol often used to describe like drama departments. It's the like yes. The two masks.
Yes. The happy mask and the sad mask.
Right. The happy mask is the comedy and the sad mask is the tragedy. So clearly comedy meant something else in the past.
Mm-hmm.
What did it mean in the past?
We're going to get there.
We're going to get there?
Yes.
Is it like loading or?
No.
Oh, I'm asking. Like, what does it mean? Like... The Greek classical comedy, like what do they kind of mean by that?
Well, it kind of had more than one meaning in ancient Greece as well.
Hmm.
And there is actually a direct connection between haha funny comedy, back then and today, but then there's a distinction between. That type of comedy and theatrical comedy.
Well, we're talking about ha ha funny comedy today.
Yes.
So is the definition back then, I guess, just pretty analogous to what we would think funny means today or like what we mean when we say comedy today?
Their comedy in that sense was satire.
Interesting.
Yes. So I'll read the full introduction on Wikipedia. I think it does a fairly good job.
Okay.
Comedy is a genre of fiction that consists of discourses or works intended to be humorous or amusing by inducing laughter, especially in theater, film, etc. The term originated in ancient Greece in Athenian democracy. The public opinion of voters was influenced by political satire performed by comic poets in theaters. So there's our political satire. And then just to give the full thing, since you had mentioned it earlier, the theatrical genre of Greek comedy can be described as a dramatic performance pitting two groups, ages, genders, or societies against each other in an amusing agon or conflict.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay. So, this is where I think it starts to get interesting. There is a difference between being funny... And comedy.
Yes.
Comedy is something...
For instance.
Yeah, good.
If a child falls and hurts himself.
Hilarious.
That's hilarious, but it's not comedy.
It's not comedy.
Unless you make a show out of it.
Unless you televise it. Which, you know, at this point, we would like to say this episode is brought to you by America's Funniest Home Videos. No, I'm just kidding.
It's not, but...
It's not,
it would be funny.
Would be funny.
And yet not comedy. Anyway.
Yes. So, like, what is funny then? Besides that.
Besides this awkward silence as well.
And where does it come from? Like, why do we find things funny?
What is a funny?
A funny.
Today, yes. On the science of funny.
Science of funny. Do other animals think things are funny? Is it just us?
I'm pretty sure they do.
I'm pretty sure they do, too. Especially the other more sapient creatures. Like,
yeah.
I've had multiple instances of having witnessed other primates, and it is very obvious that they find things funny to me.
Yes.
And I don't think it's just me personifying apes either. Arguably, they have personhood. some form of it, I guess.
Personality.
Personality, yeah. Well.
Depends on what you mean by personhood.
It really depends on what you mean by personhood, yeah. But
personhood usually gives someone like a first class place, though.
Yeah,
it's but a connotation of being first class that way.
That's true. But we're hashtag humanity first here on this podcast. Right. So
so they're not.
but they're kind of like, it's like,
sorry, chimps, but you also don't understand English, so I don't care.
Yeah, it's like a beta version of personhood. pre-alpha humans.
So, yes, definitely them. I have definitely witnessed other animals playing jokes on one another and on people.
Mm-hmm.
Cats are a fun example, pushing things off the shelves, specifically to irritate people while making eye contact.
And being explicitly told not to do so.
Right. They know what they're doing.
They do know
what they're doing. And it's
hilarious. It is hilarious.
Also, I've seen animals get other animals get embarrassed as well. And I think there's definitely a link between a sense of humor and embarrassment. When you're on the wrong end of the joke,
right,
you are embarrassed.
Which, okay, let's go all the way down this rabbit hole. Okay. Then I've been holding this off. So I recently acquired a new cat for reasons, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading up about it because I thought that this cat might be sick. But it's actually surprisingly difficult to tell when a cat is sick versus injured, right?
Mm, okay.
Like, most animals exhibit physical signs of injury because it's unavoidable. Like, the thing don't work like it used to, right? Like, we've seen, most people can recall images of animals limping,
mm-hmm.
you know, birds with cocked wings and stuff like that, you know. But illness afflicts other animals too, like a cold. Like, there is such a thing as the feline rhinovirus. Like, cats can get colds just like people do. But it's harder to tell. And I was reading up on, like, how to tell. And weirdly, there's this stoicism that a lot of animals have when it comes to pain and being sick. And there's a good reason for it. Because in the wild, if you are obviously sick, you're easier prey.
Yes.
If you look as though you're not sick.
Yeah, most animals don't want to exhibit signs of weakness like that. Yeah, it is interesting that humans are one of the animals that do this, and it's because of how social we are.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that, yeah, because it is bad for us to attract the attention of potential predators.
Right.
But it's good to attract the attention of other humans to help us.
Right.
Like, yeah, and consider also, like, tears, crying.
Crying, yeah.
Why does crying exist? Like, crying makes you, not only exhibits, like, advertises your state of weakness to mm-hmm. everything around you, but actually makes you weaker because it is harder to see with tears in your eyes.
Mm-hmm. Now, to be fair, like, when we say crying, we mean tears out of the eyes crying, not, like, yes. crying out. Like, you might imagine a small animal right. doing, especially one that has yet to be weaned and mm-hmm. has some very limited parental social structures mm-hmm. involved. But we persist that into adulthood. We still cry
yes.
as adults, and we feel compelled to do so emotionally sometimes. And it is for attention. Like, we yes, want other humans to know. Yeah. Like, this weird idea.
Sometimes people still cry alone, but it has to be particularly bad for that to happen. Usually.
Right. And that's very interesting. So, what's weird, though, is to think that these two things are somewhat possibly related. And then, again, remember, we're your favorite armchair philosophers here. If you want to know, I guess, the anthropology of, like, this kind of stuff, go do your own research, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But armchairing it out here, you know, let's walk that line that you had set out before. So, you have crying, which is something that we do to, like, that social creatures do to attract attention of other creatures that might be of a benefit to them. What's the social benefit of embarrassment?
Or is it to like make you not want to do the thing again?
Right. It's like shame. It literally is.
It's
shame.
Soft shame. Yeah.
Soft shame. Yeah.
Well, yeah. It's being ashamed of yourself, kinda.
Mm-hmm. But demonstrating it outwardly.
Yes.
And there's a value to that because otherwise, like, for example, most people. A good example. If you're we've all been kids and we've all bullied or been bullied or seen bullying depicted mm-hmm. in some way, shape, or form, right? bullying is made worse when the person who's getting bullied starts to like cry or feel sorry for themselves. Like, and this also happens too. Like, if you've ever been made fun of for something and felt ashamed for it, often the quickest way to stop being made fun of is to just come out with it and be like, yeah, you know what? I screwed up. You know, I'm an idiot. Like,
yeah, but leave me alone. Yeah.
Yeah. But well, and crap on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, make fun of yourself or something like that. It's just demonstrating to others, like, I get it. And that triggers something to be like, okay, so this person has now fallen back into social compliance. Now we're treating a member of the group again wrongly. We need to treat them better than this. Like the standard, they have fallen into a new orbital where it's unacceptable to treat them this way. But as long as you are willing to fall out of the orbital to be an outlier, we can make fun of you. So, and on the one hand, we kind of want you to, because it's fun to make fun of people, but also it's a system that keeps things pretty coherent, you know? And so it makes sense why we get embarrassed. But does that also explain why we find things funny? I don't think so. But it might also explain satire and comedy. So why do we find things funny, though? Like, why is it that if I look over and see, okay, and this is getting weird these days, why is it that if I can show you a deep fried SpongeBob meme, you and I will find that hilarious?
Right.
But we could show our parents and they'd just be confused.
Right. They think we were idiots.
Yeah. Yes. You're an idiot. I mean, they may find that funny, but not the thing.
Not the thing that we are finding funny. They find us embarrassing to contemplate.
The best example of this lately that my wife doesn't find funny that I do find funny is there's a picture. It's a poorly drawn picture of a giant worm and the letters D-O-O-N at the bottom. Hilarious. The first time I saw it, I cracked up and in my head I said, huh?
Dune.
Like that was it.
Yep.
Enough to get me cracking up, and I'm cracking up just thinking about it. It's stupid. And my wife just looked at it and said that exact thing. This is stupid.
Why are you laughing?
Why are you laughing? And you know what I mean? So what, why that? Why do we laugh at things like that? What is the use in that?
I didn't think I was going to have this talk with you, but you might be an idiot.
For the benefit of our listeners, David.
So, why do we find stuff like that funny? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't even know if there is a scientific reason as to why we think things funny. I've heard before the maybe kitschy phrase that laughter is the brain tickling itself. But I've also seen people try to actually diagram funny. And
it really is hard to nail down.
It really is hard to nail down. But the best diagram depiction that's abstract enough to be true still, I'll say, is generally there's an expectation that isn't met.
Right.
But it's not met in a way that you don't expect.
Right.
And the sudden realization of something that you feel like you should have known before, and plus the subversion of an expectation given, equals laughter. Like,
yeah.
You just don't know how else to computationally deal with that information. So it comes out as funny.
Right.
It's like your brain giving up.
Your brain has nothing else to do but contract your diaphragm and make you make silly noises.
Right. And feel good about it for some reason.
Yes. And also it feels good for some reason. Yeah.
It's like a weird coping mechanism for being like unprepared.
Wrong.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's like, congratulations, you are wrong. But it's okay.
Nature's copium.
Wow. Laughter is nature's copium. That should be on a t-shirt. This episode is brought to you by philosophershop.com. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it isn't.
Although that might be a good idea. We'll table it. merch table. But yeah, it is weird. The haha funny. It is a weird thing for sure. I don't think there really is a good reason for it. Also, very, very few creatures laugh. It's about the same number of creatures, I bet, that cry, that laugh. And I don't mean like the hyena, like the things we call laughing that aren't actually laughing.
Yeah, hyena laughter sounds like laughing, but they don't do it for nearly the same reasons.
Not at all.
They do it to sound creepy, and they do.
Yeah, and it's pretty unfunny when they do it.
Yeah, it's actually terrifying.
But maybe that... I would have to reach to come up with a reason. Like, imagine two cave people and one of them laughs. What does the other one think when the other one laughs? Like, what is being communicated just by that? Like, in the moment before they attempt to get an explanation, because that's the only thing I can think of, is if you see someone laughing, you're confused most of the time. You want to know why they're laughing. And maybe that's part of it. Like, we're drawn to laughter. Like, if you saw people gathered around crying, you may not actually want, you may not be compelled to go see what's going on. That,
unless I know those people, but I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but if you see them gathered around laughing and snickering at something,
I want to be part of this.
Well, yes. What's going on? I want to be let in on the joke, you know? Like, tell me what's funny, you know? And maybe that's the point.
Yeah, laughter is one of those contagious social behaviors that we actually want to participate in.
Yeah, and to armchair anthropologize my way out of it, maybe it's exactly that. It's you found something that you didn't know that should have been obvious. It's also likely that other people also haven't thought of this thing. And so you laugh so that other people will ask you about it, because you, again, remember, you feel dumb for not knowing this, right? So you don't want to volunteer the information because you otherwise would feel kind of ashamed for not knowing something, right? It's like a subversion of that where you, it's like, okay, normally I'd be too ashamed to share anything, but because funny, it's okay. And now I'm going to tell you thing. And if they also find it funny, then it's like, okay, the whole group has now learned something that it didn't know before in a way that no one has to feel ashamed about it. But if everyone else knew that thing and you were the only one left out, then you're just an idiot.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Like, that's, again, totally armchaired. That's the only thing that's coming to mind right now that makes some sense as to, like, why societies that found things as funny ended up evolving and leaving these things as funny, and why we think things are funny today. Or it just was a nascent consequence. It's something that happened that it didn't really affect us in a positive or negative way, and it's just an unfortunate consequence of other things that were trying to happen, or maybe fortunate consequence, who knows?
Right. I mean, we do enjoy it, so.
Yeah, we do enjoy it, you know. Yeah. So yeah, that's comedy and funny, I guess, in a historical context, but
yes.
I think the real meat of what we wanted to get to today was, like, what is comedy useful for, though, in a social context beyond just making people feel good, you know? And also, as we kind of alluded to before, how do things change? Like, why is it that some things are funny now, but not later? And sometimes funny now to some people, but not funny now to other people, you know? Let's take an example. So I grew up watching The Three Stooges because my dad thought it was hilarious. As a child, I thought it was hilarious because what's not to love about violence?
Right.
But also,
A
time-honored pastime. But nowadays, seeing someone fall down some stairs is just not the same kind of funny as it once was. Like, especially if I'm watching something like The Three Stooges, where I'm like, oh, I know what I'm getting into here.
Right.
Someone's going to hurt themselves. I'm ready. Yeah.
Right.
Still funny, but not as funny.
I want to see someone hurt themselves in spectacular ways now.
Now I get on Lively and feel depressed. So
that's totally different. that stops being funny after a while.
yeah, it does. And maybe it is that you now expect it, so it's not funny anymore. I mean, that might explain darker senses of humor, as we might say.
Right.
Is that the more funny you've gotten, the darker things have to get for it to be funny again. But it also kind of comes back around because you kind of forget about how dumb something can be, i.e. the Dune picture in my head, living rent-free right now. That was an endless source of joy. But I think ultimately there really is not such a thing as everyone finds this funny. I don't think there is such a thing as the perfect funny.
Funny is in the eye of the beholder, so to speak.
Yeah. And I think it's pretty much based on your experience. Like, I can't see it any other way. I think that there are some fundamental things that all people find funny to some degree. that are like almost always funny, if not abused. Like the first time a new kind of joke, if it's even possible, comes about, everyone might find it funny, but then it will fall out of favor.
Right.
And I think that
it's going to be that joke that old people tell.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think that like the prime time for funny was when we syndicated communications, like not just letters and stuff, but newspapers was the first time that you could actually kind of start to see maybe patterns of what people found were funny. And we haven't done this obviously because we armchair here. But that I think would be an interesting study looking at comic strips. When did they first appear in papers? Which I don't actually know the answer to that. Let's see if the Depression Box of Human Knowledge has the answer. And not just when they first came about, but like I'm certain someone was the first news. Some paper was the first paper to have comic strips, right? But if you could find examples of those common strips throughout time, can you actually track jokes, you know, and what the standard of humor was in the society at that time? And while you're doing that, I will note that there are historical examples of jokes being told in graffiti long ago. Like there are examples of Roman graffiti that had like genital jokes, for example.
Oh yeah.
That was a thing.
Another time-honored pastime.
A time-honored pastime. Let's make fun of things that we obscure from vision because that satisfies one of the conditions for something being funny.
Yep. Unexpected.
Unexpected. Yeah. And so
it's absolutely expected though, but
right. But not, but the social passive, but
yes,
it being brought into the public space isn't. And so there were people talking about that so long ago. But I wouldn't necessarily classify that as being syndicated, you know.
Right. So it looks like the closest, well, and this isn't exactly syndicated, right?
Sure.
But some of the, okay, looks like some of the first satirical, like sequential narrative drawings go back to 18th century England. So quite a while back.
Quite a while back.
Yeah, like the beginning of printing, right? Mm-hmm. A little bit later than the beginning of printing, but pretty close.
And I would be willing to bet that at that time, if you had copies throughout time, you could actually watch the evolution of humor happen. And then if you took examples throughout the world of that time, you could kind of see the delay of like when a new joke format came out and things that people thought funny, you know, moved, and they probably move along with culture as well. Like things found funny in some cultures, again, because anything that's setting an expectation, which culture does a really good job of, because that's part of its purpose is to kind of outline and set a standard set of expectations amongst its participants. Anything, any cultures that have similar expectations will probably have similar topics of things that are funny.
Yeah.
A time-honored tradition was wife jokes.
Yes. Or
being married jokes.
Yes, being married jokes.
Any culture or institution that does not have a monogamous relationship in it will not have jokes like this because they don't make sense to them. But anyone right. that does have an expectation that you will get married and has a common idea about how a marriage or a union works will have things that are subversive to that expectation that are funny.
Yes.
Pretty simple, I guess. But if not then definitely radio, because radio allowed the human voice to stretch a lot farther, than newspaper did, and a lot more instantaneously. And I think the more, you know, synchronized our communications get, the more you see jokes kind of go in waves. I mean, you see this with memes. You and I will see a meme and find it hilarious. Like I think we joked about this one time even, the origin of all memes. There isn't one, but the compilation of memes is Reddit a lot of the time.
Yes.
And then they go out through the dispersion networks known as Instagram, Facebook, you know, all these
cream rises to the top of Reddit.
Yeah. And then it's pipelined out to the masses through these other social
and
networks.
And then eventually my dad shows me something that he saw on Facebook that I saw 6 months ago on Reddit.
Exactly. And so you can kind of catch it in real time as, and more importantly than the memes themselves, the meme templates. Because we're still not that creative. Because I think you and I both remember the original memes. Like some of the original meme templates,
I should say. Back when they were called image macros.
I don't remember that.
If you were nerdy enough.
Yeah, if you were nerdy enough. But there was the anti-joke chicken, the socially awkward penguin. Like, they had names for the templates because there were so few of them.
The most appropriate for our show, the Velociraptor.
The Velociraptor, exactly. Yes. Maybe or maybe not where we got the name from, you know.
Definitely not. But
definitely not. But definitely maybe.
And then we're changing the name of the show.
And then Rage Comics were absolutely prolific and
yes.
spawned a bunch of characters. But nowadays, we don't even really bother naming the templates because they change so often. And
right. To the point where it's actually kind of hard to find templates sometimes because you don't even know what it's called or what the source material is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more than... And there's even a meme about that. Like the... I don't know what you call it, but there's the four-panel meme template of the guy going into the hospital, talking to the nurse, standing there with like his wife, and then after like his wife, and then the aftermath. Are you familiar with this template?
Okay, Loss.
Loss. Yes, that's it. The Loss template. But it's so ubiquitous that there are super minimalistic versions of this.
Loss had no reason to become a meme, though. But it was just an entry in a webcomic, right?
Yes.
There's no dialogue in the original webcomic, in this entry anyway. And like and it's like it's sad, right?
That's why it's funny. No, it's not. It is sad. But what makes it funny is that...
Seeing it out of context, right?
Seeing it out of context.
Well, but... yeah, and then it, you know, the joke evolved into how abstract can we be, and it still somehow find a way to be tied back to the thing. So then, you know, it gets abstracted into, like, sticks oriented a certain way, which is...
Yes, that one.
Oriented the way that the people in the four frames of the comic were, you know...
Single stick. Yeah,
single stick of the guy walking in the door, two sticks talking to the lady at the counter.
Stick sideways, stick upright.
Of being next to the hospital bed, yeah.
And then, like, short stick.
Right.
And that's it. That's all that's necessary. That's and it. Anybody who knows the Lost meme is going to look at that and they'll take a second and go, ah, this is Lost again, because it was so ubiquitous.
And then it went back the other way to see how elaborate you can be, but hide Lost in it.
Right. But it's an incredibly, you know, meta joke about templates. That's it was very poignant about the power of the template. And then after that, we just used random templates that change so fast that they don't, like you said, don't bother getting named. But throughout all this time, both historically and now, there have always been people that have found ways to kind of make their livings about being funny.
Yes.
The oldest depiction I think that we can kind of come up with, not to say that it is the oldest, but the one that jumps to most people's minds when they think the comedian archetype. Let's think about the oldest comedian. It's the court jester is often one of the ones that's brought up.
Yes.
And it's a person in a very...
The fool, if you will.
The fool. Yeah, someone in a silly outfit that does silly things.
Right. For the king.
For the king, of course. What was the original use, though? Like, were these actually things? I would assume so, because we have depictions of them, but...
Yes, particularly in England.
Yeah, but what was the point, though, of the fool or the jester?
Court entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Literally it.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know where...
And it wasn't necessarily always comedy. Sometimes it was music or just telling stories.
Right. They were more of a minstrel, if you conjure that image. Now, I did hear something one time, I don't know how true this is, that it was considered uncouth to make fun of royalty, but this person was given like special credo to do so. Is that actually true? Or is that just something someone made up?
Looking at the Wikipedia page.
Thank you.
Of the court jester right now, it appears so, actually. It appears that that's actually true. The term is jester's privilege.
Interesting.
Yes, the ability and right of a jester to talk and mock freely without being punished.
Okay. And that brings me to the comedians of today. So, one thing that I feel like has always been a thing when it comes to finding things funny, there's this... Tragedies are often things that are made fun of. Right.
Yep.
Not at the same time that they occur, naturally.
No, there is the
there's a
the timeline. Notion the notion of too soon.
But that's what I want to talk about.
Yes.
So there's this timeline.
How soon is too soon?
An event happens, and the moment after it happens, it's probably not funny, especially if it's a tragic event.
Right, actually tragic. Yes,
actually tragic. I kind of want to give an example.
9/11.
We talked about it. Yeah, we can do this now. Okay. 9/11. It's still too soon for some people.
Yeah.
It's been 11 years and it's still too soon.
11.
Oh.
It's been 21
years. 21 years. Sorry, I was off by a decade. 21 years and some people still think it's not funny. Well, okay. It wasn't funny.
It wasn't funny.
But the jokes
and
about
many
it.
Many parts
aren't
of
funny.
It are still not funny.
Sure. But people dying is still not funny.
Right. And actually, like, going back and, like, seeing recordings and things, like, that's not funny. But
no,
there are jokes about it now that are funny.
Yes. Like, someone doing a comedic sketch about what the people who hijacked the planes must have been thinking or doing.
Right.
It's funny. Well, we think it's funny. Some people still don't think it's funny. But why? Like, why? And how do you calculate the too soon
Well,
time?
I think that feeds into the formula for funny that we discussed earlier. It's an unexpected thing. It's like being jovial in the context of a very serious and awful thing.
Yeah, but that's also unexpected the moment after it happens. In fact, it's arguably more unexpected because of the concept of too soon, right? Like, imagine being the guy sitting in the booth adjacent to Abraham Lincoln. Abe Lincoln gets, like, capped. His wife doesn't think it's funny, but the guy in the booth next to it looks over and goes, "Whoa, man, should have told me I was in the splash zone." Like,
right.
Even if it's a bad joke, which arguably makes it even funnier, the fact that it's immediately afterwards is the most unexpected, right?
Right.
But I guarantee you most of the people at the time would not have found it hilarious.
Right.
But you and I do now because it's, they're all dead now. Who cares?
Right. I don't know any of those people. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even know where they're buried. So, like, is it really that it's unexpected, though? Or is it that there's some other force that's we're not factoring in to this?
Hmm.
Like, is a concept, I would argue that the gravity of the circumstance is definitely a component. Because, you know, a person cutting themselves can be funny. If it's like a small, like if they like nick their finger, it might be funny. Mm-hmm. But if a person cuts off their thumb, it's not funny right
no,
in that moment.
That's terrifying. Yes.
Yeah. So, but it might be funny later because you might make peg leg jokes or something equivalent, right?
Right.
Or prosthetic jokes, I guess, to generalize.
Sure.
But if the person dies, it's not funny. But it might be a little while later, depending on the circumstances of their demise.
Right. He might have died in a funny way.
Sure. And weirdly, it's... Okay, tangent time. Hypotheticals about terrible things seem to get around this loophole a bit. So as long as there's no real damage, like you can hypothetically think of some awful circumstances... And they're okay because they're hypothetical. And in fact, there's a kind of comedian that does this. Mm. The only one that jumps to mind is Anthony Jeselnik. Do you know who that is?
No.
Okay, so this is a comedian that his entire shtick is he says horrible things that are hypothetical. But what makes them funny is that they're like...
Plausible?
No, it's that... Okay, here's a thing... He tells stories, and it's like, okay, here's the thing. Then the next thing happens. It's unexpectedly terrible. Then the punchline is, but here's the even more unexpected terrible thing. And it all kind of revolves around him being a psychopath and not finding it sad, and that's why we find it funny.
Mm.
So it's pretty out there humor. It's not for everybody, I would say. But there is no way an actual murderer would be able to get away with it. Like... I don't know of any good murderers off the top of my head, but like, imagine a serial killer telling jokes about the circumstances about which he went about his victims. Not funny, but a comedian who's never killed anybody who goes through the wild thoughts that a serial killer might have is funny, right? It could be funny.
Walking through the fantasy.
Right.
Of murdering.
Because it's ridiculous. Like, yes. It's totally abnormal and by definition, unusual and unexpected. So I guess popping out of the tangent of the hypothetical, I think the gravity of the circumstance has something to do with it. There are definitely complicating factors. Like, I think there's a genuine, like, unexpectedness of it. Like the mechanics of how something occurs. You know, like a car crashing into a school bus and killing people is terrible. But if it's a clown car, it's a little funnier. You know? If the bus is any other kind of bus besides a normal school bus, it can also be funnier. You know, the more factors that are unexpected and the more twists it takes, the funnier it gets to a point.
Right.
So I don't know if there's an exact calculus, but I think it has a lot to do with the person's, how tolerable you are to knowing about unfortunate circumstances, you know, and your relative position to it, right? I think that it's easier for people who were not even alive during 9/11 to find something about it funny than the people who lived it. And I don't even mean the people who were there. Definitely the people who were there, but the people who remember it happening and the genuine terror that they felt, you know, you have to kind of come back from that. You have to desensitize yourself to that a bit before it becomes funny or even potentially funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so that tangent's over. Back to the court jester, which is what I wanted to get at a long time ago. So there's this, I think this comes from the meme of the jester being allowed to mock the king, that idea. There's this kind of, not always, but some people hold the title of being a comedian with a similar, like, a reverence today. And that is that comedians are allowed to mock things that most people would not feel okay to mock. Public leaders and government, social institutions like churches, you know. And they kind of all stem from, like, whether he was the first to do it or whether he's, like, kind of the modern archetype that most people look and call back to. Like the George Carlin method of being funny, where his particular brand of comedy was pointing out absurdities that we either do not think about or it's uncomfortable to believe.
Complete and total irreverence.
Yes.
That's George Carlin.
Yeah. What does irreverence mean? Just what's the definition of irreverence?
Do you want me to look it up? Or
just tell me, I guess. I have an idea about what it means, but I don't want to be wrong. I'd rather you just tell me.
Like not holding anything sacred at all.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I thought it meant, but I also didn't know, to be full disclosure here on this one. Okay. So holding nothing sacred.
Yeah.
But because you hold nothing sacred, you can get the most unbiased, unjaundiced view of something and not have no excuses, right? Like people often will use the reverence of something as an excuse, you know, like, well, clergy members make mistakes, but because clergy members do a lot of good and are pillars of the community, we shouldn't make fun of them. We should respect them. Well, if you're irreverent, like George Carlin, you know, forget
that. They're the perfect target, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. Forget that. If anything, it's a bit more ludicrous that when they do something wrong, because they should be held in high esteem.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. They should hold themselves to higher standards. Yep.
Exactly. And when people listen to that type of comedian, they get the same kind of sense I feel like people got from listening to the jester. It's this notion and saying of, well, we're all thinking it. You know what I mean? Like that's the phrase that gets used. Comedians are just brave enough to say what we were all thinking anyway.
Yes.
And that's why it's funny. You know, mocking a king, everybody knows who the king is, especially the court. Like if the king happens to be like a very promiscuous person and everybody knows it, but you're not supposed to talk about it. It kind of sets up this weird dichotomy of this pool of knowledge that people have access to that they're not supposed to discuss when we normally would discuss everything. And then this person just blurts it out and it's hilarious because we all know it's true. Jokes about someone that aren't true typically are less funny. Some of the funniest jokes out there are when they're absolutely true. And that's, you even hear that get said. There's the idea of, oh, it's funny because it's true.
Right.
You know. And so there's
too funny to make up.
Too funny to make up. Yeah. exactly. Can't make this up, you know.
Yep.
So that being said, there has always been some pushback to this, though. Some people do not like when their favorite sacred cow, if you will, is on the chopping block of comedy. And I get it. I do. No one likes being made fun of. Back to that way earlier instance where I was talking about being made fun of or bullied for something. Yes. No one likes that. No one likes to be the butt of the joke.
No.
Or do they like the things that they like to be the butt of a joke? You know? Like, jokes about old people are funny sometimes, but when it's your specific grandparent, it might be less funny. It's like, hey, you know, don't make fun of my grandpa like that or my right. whatever. But if it was anyone else's grandpa, it'd be hilarious, you know? And that's kind of hypocritical, though.
Yes.
But I also feel like we kind of, I don't know, I feel like it's a little, there's a balance to this. Okay. So I'll just come around and say it. So in an era of cancel culture, if you will, comedians are prime suspects because they are constantly saying things that most people would consider to be inappropriate. Again, if you're going back to the idea of gestures privilege, then yeah, by all means, that's kind of their job, if you will. Yeah. That's why people pay money to see them. Anybody could get up and say what a comedian says, even with the same timing, but very few people are willing to get up in front of a crowd of strangers and do it.
Right.
Like, I could recite an entire comedy routine that's filthy to my family members and they find it hilarious. But I'm not going to get up on a stage in front of strangers and do that because I might get cast in a negative social light.
Right.
You know, there might be social repercussions for what I say.
Or worse.
Or worse. Physical repercussions for what right. I say. Legal repercussions in some cases, mm-hmm. which is ironic. Let's talk about the legal ones first, because they're the ones that I think that are more troubling.
Yeah.
You can go to jail for telling jokes now. Which, arguably, you could always have done that. But I feel like for a while there was this idea that the jester's privilege could be extended to anybody who chooses that life, right? And arguably even further. So if I wanted to... Well, and it also depends on what country you're in. That's the other part of
yeah.
it. So if you live in a country like the United States where you're really not... there's really not supposed to be any legal consequences for most of what you say or anything that you say, really, depending on your interpretation of mm-hmm. the U.S. Constitution. I could make terrible jokes about the sitting president, insert his name here for whenever you're listening to this, doesn't matter, shouldn't matter, and I should not, the police should not come knocking on my door about it.
Right.
As long as I'm, especially if I'm making it clear that I'm telling a joke. But even then, arguably, I shouldn't even have to tell you it's right, a joke.
You should be able to say it unironically, yeah.
Yeah. But there are other countries in the world where you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of problematic. However, you can do that. That's the weird thing. Let's just pose the question. What do you think about the gesture's privilege? Should it be something that everybody has? Should it be a privilege or should it be just an innate right?
Well, it should be a right, right? But yeah. Also, I don't think kings should exist, so...
I'm just saying in the modern era.
For reasons like that, yeah.
Yeah, because I think the idea of having this is the state-sponsored funny man seems a bit like a conflict of interest. Much like the gesture's privilege did, I guess, looking back on it. The jester knew the limits because their employer was the one, the person who's giving you the privilege is also the person that can revoke that privilege at any time.
Right, you can be fired, yeah.
So how much of a privilege is it, really? It's more like a lot of rope that you can potentially hang yourself with.
Mm-hmm.
And so this idea of, oh, well, this person's actually a comedian, so they are allowed to say it, but you aren't. Yep, it's gatekeeping. Why are we gatekeeping comedy? In an artificial way, you know, because how shameful would it be to have to get a comedy license so that you could go out there and do a comedy and be okay? Like, what's the point?
I'm a licensed funny guy.
I'm licensed funny man here to tell you a funny, and in no way will these jokes ever infringe on the people who gave me this license, you know? I don't think you can have true funny without... the freedom to just be it, you know. If it's any restriction on it, is going to clamp down on the funny,
right?
And more importantly, the demand for funny will always be present, you know. and the market will answer. So you can try to
regulate
it.
People are still going to be telling uncouth jokes.
Sure. There are still going to be people who are brave enough to get up on in front of a stage and tell the uncouth jokes and face the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, to use an odd, unlikely parallel to this, people really want drugs. People want drugs real bad. But drugs are super illegal.
Most of the places in the world anyway.
Yeah. Who cares? They still flow. The market will find an answer to the demand.
Right.
Regardless of the restrictions that you place. You have to make people not want it. And I don't think you will ever make people not want funny. Because I think there's just something just very base about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But the other thing that gets tossed around when we talk about the licensed funny man is this idea that comedy should be allowed to be free because comedy is a vessel for truth. And that's where I'm beginning to wonder if we're going a bit too far in the other way. I'm not saying comedy can't be, but is it fair to say that comedy is always that place where you find nuggets of truth because we were all thinking it, or because it's true, it's funny? Is that really true? Like, do you need it? I'm not saying we shouldn't protect comedy. We should. But I think doing anything for the wrong reason also kind of taints the thing that you do. Like, I'm more than happy to go out and stand in defense of comedians and the right for people to tell jokes. But I don't know that I'm willing to get up there and die on the hill of, because these are the sages and truth tellers of our time, we must protect them.
No.
And I know that's kind of an unpopular stance to take.
I've heard many a comedian make a joke about things that, you know, kind of sound like they could be true, but really aren't.
Yeah.
And they're funny because, well, you showed up to see Funny Man, and you've probably been drinking as well.
That true drink minimum helped.
Your BS detector is turned off, and you're just there to have a good time, right? You're not there with your pen and clipboard taking notes, trying to scrutinize every claim that these guys make.
Sure.
That's not what you're there for. And I think that actually a lot of bad ideas can get spread around because of that.
Yeah.
You know, be it rumors or just, you know, myths and other untruths that spread around in society because people like to repeat them because they think they're funny. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so it's a weird,
like, how much, like, prejudice against gay people do you think persisted because of comedy?
A lot.
Right?
A whole bunch.
Gay jokes are plentiful.
And funny. Frankly, yeah.
Yeah.
And the only thing that makes them not funny most of the time is just acknowledgement of the fact that it's like, oh, well. Just knowing that the joke might actually cause some harm and propagation of it.
Right.
You know. Does that mean you shouldn't be allowed to tell them? No.
No.
But at the same time, it's, you know, same thing with stereotype propagations. Like, there's an argument, I think, to be made that stereotypes do exist for a reason. I'm not going to say that they don't. But I would think that the reason stereotypes persists is different than the reasons they came into existence. And I think that comedy can absolutely be used as a vessel to persist a stereotype. And there's something to be said about stereotypes' effects on people who fit the stereotype, even if they don't exhibit the actual stereotyped behavior. Mm-hmm.
They fit the demographic of the stereotype, but don't exhibit the stereotype. Yeah,
exactly. I'm not a scientist in this area or whatnot, but there definitely is this idea of people like to play the role, you know. It's built into our psychology. We want to follow the given expectations. We want to fit in. Most people do. And even people who don't want to fit in want to not fit in a specific way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think everybody, like, the idea of the edgy teen.
Yes.
Every edgy teen is the same
edgy
teen.
Let's be rebels together.
Yeah, let's. I'm going to be the most common kind of unique you can think of.
Yeah.
Cool. And that's literally someone knowing about a stereotype and then taking on the stereotype willingly. Or maybe unwillingly, but still. They would not be, like, why? why is it that everyone I know that wants to dress up and behave like a cowboy also kind of feel the same urge to like dip, for example? Like you don't need to dip to be a cowboy, but the Marlboro Man identity is so ingrained that if you see a cowboy not dipping, it's a little weird. And so there's a feeling that you want to do it, you know? Even me, like when I smoked cigarettes, I'll never forget when it was made obvious to me that the way that I would even hold a cigarette tells a lot about where you're from, mainly like US versus Europe. You know, I don't know if you knew this, but people in the US hold their cigarettes between two fingers.
Yes, I knew that.
But Europeans hold them with their thumb.
Hmm.
Yeah, purely social. There's no rule book that tells you how to smoke, but Europeans hold it like Americans might hold like an illicit substance to smoke.
Yes, that's the only context I've seen someone hold a cigarette like that.
Yeah, but Europeans hold cigarettes this way. Well, they did. Thanks to modern media, you can't really tell us much.
Right.
But that's an idea of there's this stereotype that existed that people who took on some parts of the stereotype, you know, adopted the rest of it because we're just trying to fit in. You know, it would look weird if I held a cigarette, you know, like in a clenched fist. Just like right. if you see someone writing with a pencil with a clenched fist, it looks weird to you.
You just don't know how to use a pencil.
Yeah, it's like, oh, wow, you're new at this, you know. But back to jokes on that, it's, I don't know, like, I don't like being a fence sitter on a lot of things, but this is one that I do feel like I need to set the fence on because I'm not actually happy with either side, the extremes on either side of the issue. You know, I don't like this idea that because jokes might perpetuate stereotypes, we should regulate them. Don't like that. But this idea that jokes contain hidden knowledge that we need to somehow spread to the masses also just doesn't really like appeal to me either. You know, I ultimately would get off the fence to side with the, well, I'd rather people be able to tell jokes because honestly, it's freedom.
Yes.
And I don't ever want to see myself getting arrested for something like telling a joke. Jokes also, by their very nature, are often on the fringes of society. No one wants to hear a common joke.
Right.
You know.
It's not funny.
It's not funny, yeah.
Yeah, usually, the more times you hear a joke, the less funny it gets. Sometimes it's not true, but...
Sometimes it's not true. And sometimes it comes back around.
That's also true. Sometimes you just need to take a break, and then it's funny again.
Right. Or just keep going.
True.
One of my favorite...
You can burn out and then it becomes funny again. Yeah.
One of my favorite jokes to do is when I tell a joke that isn't funny, instead of just letting the awkward silence be there, is just to continue to repeat the joke louder and louder until someone finally laughs.
Right.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's a bit of social engineering, but it's hilarious to me because... It's so far the best strategy I've told a lot of bad jokes.
Like also the recurring gag. It's like this isolated incident was not very funny, but seeing it happen again and again throughout something else is funny.
And more importantly, like distilling it into what the actual funny part is. I have a couple running jokes like this, especially like with people that I talk to a lot. Tell me you're hungry. How would you say that?
I'm hungry.
Okay.
You're holding your hand out to me.
Why?
Hi, hungry. I'm dad.
There you go. Yes. Exactly. See, it's I don't need to say the part anymore. And I've done this with my so many times that she's actually super pissed off every time I do it. She'll say it. And I've gotten to the point where I don't even think about it. But when I hear the word I'm at the beginning.
We're about to meet somebody.
Yeah. To meet someone, my hand flies out in her direction to accept a handshake, and she's gotten to the point where she just hates it. She slaps my hand away, but every now and again she forgets, and then she reaches out and shakes it. And when she does, then I lose it. Like it's hilarious again. You know, it's so stupid. But still, anyway, jokes exist on the fringe of society by definition most of the time. You know, like. They're not normal things that you would normally find acceptable. They by definition, as we discussed way earlier, are meant to fall outside of what's expected.
Mm-hmm.
And everything deemed acceptable, by definition, is acceptable. It's expected. We expect the acceptable. We don't expect the unacceptable.
Yes.
And to relegate jokes to the area of the unexpected acceptable things is ludicrous because they almost don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are things that are acceptable that we just don't think about, but usually not. Usually everything's unacceptable except for the things that are acceptable. Right? It's not the inverse. It's not that anything's acceptable except for these things, you know? And one function of comedy might be to help find things that are acceptable that you just didn't think of. That's fair. Mm-hmm. But you're going to get it wrong sometimes. And I think to punish people when they get it wrong is bad. So, but I don't know.
Especially when you can punish them enough by embarrassing them by not laughing at their joke.
Which in and of itself is also funny. But
that can also be funny, but...
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I view a lot of this attitude to kind of revere, like, what happens when you revere the comedian? When you revere the irreverent comedian, what happens? Like, what happens when the big comedian becomes the butt of their own joke? You know, like, I think it also kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, you're losing the plot.
Yeah, exactly. And... I don't know, just something to think about. Like, I'm not saying we shouldn't defend comedians. I'm just saying we probably shouldn't defend comedians because. Like, there are good reasons to do this, but I think seeing people go down the path of, like, you know, and you see this, I think, nowadays with, like, folks like Dave Chappelle as well. Like, I've watched enough comedians these days kind of get on stage and just, like, the line between a just speaker and a comedian is blurring by the day. And I don't like it. I think that comedy should be allowed to just be funny and be wrong. And it doesn't have to come with some serious note about, you know, like there doesn't have to be a theme, like a message, a parable in your comedy. I'm not saying good comedy can't have those things. I'm just saying, but it shouldn't be defining for the genre. And by defining it as such, you kind of start to, I think, lose the plot, you know? What good is comedy when all of a sudden you have to now expect, oh, I'm going to hear something really awful and offensive, but I'm going to hear a good message on the other side of it? That it's you shouldn't have to. That
right.
You're actually creating the very kind of regulation that you want, that you're trying to fight, but it's social. And I think that that's a problem. I think that we should absolutely allow people to exist on the fringes of society to get it wrong that are funny. In my mind, the epitome of this right now is someone like Sam Hyde. He's hilarious sometimes. And sometimes he's uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's my experience with Sam Hyde.
Yeah, it's weird. But I think that he's the canary. Like, you have to have somebody who is on that outer orbital in the Kuiper belt of funny. But when he lands on something that's hilarious, it's funny because it's so out there. But when he misses, it's uncomfortable. But that's the exact kind of person you're going to start losing because he's not doing that. He's not balancing out his comedy with a message. Comedy doesn't have to have a message.
No. Sometimes things are just ha-ha funny.
There you go. Philosophers.
Philosophers.
If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.